Shoe. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
So what was needed for Mr. Renard was slippery shoes. That's what was needed. Slippery shoes.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, folks. My name is Lynn, and I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And I'm here with my excellent co-host, Bobby Neer and Robert and Dave.
I got to give it to you. Welcome to St. Elsewhere,
everybody. And Robert always comes up with these wonderful clips to our intro.
You know what's amazing with the St. Elsewhere series was it was all a dream. And remember, we picked up that way with Dallas, where Bobby's in the shower and says to Pam, "Good morning."
And it also picked up that way with the Bob Newhart show.
Yep, definitely. Howie Mandel got his start in this series. Ed Begley Jr. was in it as well. Yeah.
Yep.
The ending was a snow globe. It was all just a child's dream.
Well, today's episode is called Dead Man's Shoes, and I'm going to turn it back over to Robert for our opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Nathan Edward Bledsoe of the Bowery Bledsoes. A man that's a specter now. One of those myriad modern-day ghosts that haunt the reeky nights of the city in search of a flop, a handout, a glass of forgetfulness. Nate doesn't know it, but his search is about to end. Because those shiny new shoes are going to carry him right into the capital of the Twilight Zone.
My boogie shoes. Back to you, Lynn.
The blue suede shoes, right? Well, yes, they are certainly going to turn them over to the Twilight Zone. And this episode is about a bum named Nate Bledsoe. And he snatches up a pair of real fancy shoes from the target of a mob hit who was dumped in an alley. Now, a lot of people don't know this, the initial item of clothing was to be a hat. But the writers decided that shoes would be better symbolically because shoes take you places. So
what? No bow ties? I thought bow ties
no
were cool,
bow
huh,
ties.
Dave?
No white carnations. They said shoes. And so wearing the shoes, that infuses him with the personality and memories of the victim. And he continues his life as the dead man. So Nate, he stops by the home of the victim's girlfriend. I don't know if it's a girlfriend or wife. It's never really established. But her name is Wilma, which brings up the episode we just reviewed on the group. What was that we just reviewed? Person to person is unknown. Her name was Wilma. So somebody likes the Flintstones, I guess. But the victim's girlfriend, Wilma, and she doesn't know who
Wilma!
Wilma! She doesn't know who this guy is, but she does recognize his mannerisms. She recognizes his kiss, and she recognizes the shoes. So, of course, after scaring and abusing this poor woman, Nate then goes to a bar to confront Daggett, Bernie Daggett, the mob boss who had him killed. And Daggett's worried at first, but then he realizes who Nate is, and he guns him down. And before...
You laughing at me? You thinking I'm a clown? Do I look like a clown?
You're talking to me? However, before Nate dies, he promises to keep returning until he kills Daggett by saying, "I'll be back, Bernie. I'll keep coming back again and again and again." And the body with the shoes on is dumped in the same alley where the original victim was dumped. And another bum finds the corpse and steals his shoes. So as the episode ends, that bum is putting on the shoes. Ha! So, this, to me, this is a story that could have, should have, and would have been interesting, except for one thing, it wasn't. This is also a story that was credited solely to writer Charles Beaumont, even though the teleplay was actually written by O.C. Rich, and Rich received absolutely no credit at all for it. Beaumont merely pitched the synopsis of the story to the director, Buck Houghton, but due to other commitments, he handed the job of writing the teleplay over to O.C. Rich. Now, that may have had something to do with the poor plot line and boring scenes, because O.C. Rich doesn't really have much of a writing credit in his catalog of, you know, whatever he's done in his life. He's not all that well-known for his writing, so that may have had something to do with it. And also, Houghton didn't end up directing the episode. That job was turned over to Montgomery Pittman, who, according to an interview given by the lead actor, Warren Stevens, he said Montgomery Pittman didn't quite know how the character should be played. So I suppose that didn't help this episode either, and it needed a lot of help, because when the director doesn't even know how to direct the characters, you can pretty much assume that you're in for a big dud. And from beginning to end, I found myself not caring about any of the characters, except maybe a little bit for Wilma, because I thought she was played very well by Joan Marshall.
I'm looking some information up for you, and it says here, Nate stops by the home of the victim's girlfriend,
who
recognizes
girlfriend?
His mannerisms and kiss.
Okay, so it is the girlfriend,
yeah.
All right. Yeah, because I could never quite tell if it was girlfriend or the wife. But, you know, I mean, you've got a bum here. He snags the shoes of a dead man, and he turns into the dead guy. And he also snagged the corpse's apartment key, which to me is strange in itself, because why would anyone take a key without knowing what it's for? And he didn't know it was an apartment key until he became Dane. So, you know, there's your Twilight Zone aspect. You got to throw that little bit in there, you know, that extra thing, you know, grab the key too, because how else are you going to get into the apartment? So basically a random key is worthless. So why did he take it? Well, because of the Twilight Zone, he had to. I also couldn't understand why Wilma just sat there instead of running from the apartment. I mean, after all, he left her alone long enough for her to scram out of there or even to call the police. And Robert, you mentioned in your original view the fact that all the bums who wear the shoes miraculously have the same shoe size. Well, that's strange.
Yeah, Rock says it at the end, too, about wearing size 9 shoes. So I guess all bums have
exactly
9
all
size.
Bums are a size 9. A lot
or
of
the
things.
Shoes must shrink on their feet or make their
or
feet big or however they...
Right, miraculously fit.
Yeah, they're cursed shoes. Well, you
That's strange, but a lot of things don't make sense in the story. But yeah, and it's a Twilight Zone. Naturally, the shoes are going to fit everyone who puts them on. And the funny thing is, I was reminded of season 1's episode, "The Four of Us Are Dying," when Nate as Dane shows up to confront his killer, Bernie Daggett. There's a similar scene in "The Four of Us Are Dying," which a dead guy shows up at his murderer's home, except it's actually, you know, Arch Hammer taking on the face of the dead guy. And, of course, it's not unusual for plot lines to be repeated in Twilight Zone. It happens quite a bit, starting with season 3. So, to me, there was no real suspense in the story. The scenes in the club and in Bernie's office were boring and drawn out. The shooting scene was quick and anticlimactic, as far as I'm concerned. Between the poor directing and the poor script, the episode just falls flat. I can totally understand why Bobby falls asleep when he watches this one. There were good actors in it, but they couldn't help it either. And, oh, by the way, Warren Stevens, he's 92 years old.
Passed away. Passed away just this year, March 27th.
No kidding. He was still acting up until 2007. Wow. Well, unfortunately, this episode was remade for season 1 of the 1980s Twilight Zone series. It was renamed Dead Woman Shoes, and that was an even bigger dud. So my rating for this turkey is a 1, and Rod Sterling always referred to the duds as turkey, so I'm going to take a cue from Rod and call it a turkey. And I also would like to welcome Felix. Hello, Felix in New Jersey. I'm so glad you're here. We missed you on the last show. But
yeah, where were you, eh?
Yeah, hey. Where were you?
Well,
so
we're
now,
talking mob, so, you know, Felix from New Jersey decided to show up today.
Yeah, from Jersey Shore, yeah. So,
yeah.
since Bobby is in the hospital and we never know when he's going to be interrupted, we're going to break our protocol once again, and we are going to go right to him for his review. Hello,
Thank
Bobby.
You, Lynn. Thank you, Lynn, and greetings to everybody from hell. It's very hot here, too. It is everywhere else in the country. As Lynn already mentioned, before I start, let me just say that I will have to leave after my comments because at this hour local time, it's time for physical therapy, and my two therapists are hovering out in the hallway. They can't wait to get at me because of my scintillating personality, and they can't wait to be with me, so I won't be able to stay for the entire show.
And they like the Olivia Newton-John song, so you'll be hearing Let's Get Physical while you're doing
exactly
your workout,
right.
Huh?
So they can't wait to get at me. I told them they'd have to give me about 10 or 15 minutes because I'm a big internet radio star. Excuse me. And I didn't want to deny people my presence for another 2 weeks. As far as this episode is concerned, Lynn has already touched on it a minute ago. In my review on the board, I mentioned that we had watched it together some time ago when we did the reviews there and that I fell asleep during it. So this morning, they wake you up here, by the way, at 6 o'clock in the morning. To stick a needle in your belly. This goes on every day, whether you're awake or not. And since I was already awake and my sleep had been destroyed, I decided to watch this online. And once again, I was unable to stay awake, except this time, of course, I'm in a hospital setting, not actually a hospital setting. And I fell asleep even more deeply. And when I came to, my nurse was giving me CPR because she thought I had a heart attack. And I came to, and I said to her, what in the hell are you doing? I said, I'm not having a heart attack. I'm just watching Dead Man's Shoes. So that's the effect that usually has on me. This episode is obviously one of the biggest pieces of crap in the entire series. It's absolutely dreadful. And I'm not about to repeat any of the scenes or anything. I wouldn't want to bore everybody to death. But as Lynn has also already touched on in her opening remarks, the opening scene is completely idiotic. First of all, after the business with the guy picking up the shoes, it switches to the girlfriend's apartment or house or whatever. It's quite remarkable to see a totally strange man walk in and a woman simply stand there calmly and somebody ask him who he is. Most women would be screaming hysterically, especially since she's the girlfriend of some sort of mobster. How does she know he's not there to kill her? So her attitude is quite remarkable. And then when he grabs her and kisses her, she seems to be thinking maybe this isn't so bad after all. It's totally ridiculous. The other thing that annoys me about the episode, other than the episode itself, is the annoying music in the background. It's supposed to be somehow scary or whatever. And it's just the same several notes are repeated over and over and over and over again.
It's supposed to be sinister.
Dark music is the fever, so...
It's simply killing me.
The fever.
I don't need to hear it through the entire episode. Well, that's fine. If you have a story that really is interesting, like the fever, I don't mind it, but not in a story like this because I'm not paying any attention to the story. I'm simply listening to the music, anything to divert my attention from the crap that's on screen. It's absolutely awful. So the rest of it is just a tedious bore. Nothing really happens. And we've seen that before over and over and over again in this series, and we'll see it once again. I thought the acting was absolutely horrible, to be honest with you, but other people saw something in it. I didn't. There's just nothing really to say about it. And like Lynn said, the ending is really nothing. You go through all this for absolutely nothing at the end. So mentioned by several people is the complete idiocy of one pair of shoes fitting so many people at random. That's simply impossible. And I only know one thing. It's a good thing I wasn't in the story because I wear a size 13 triple E shoe, so I wouldn't have fit into those shoes at all. So my feet are pretty big, but you know what they say about men with big feet, so that can be an advantage. Other than that, it's just absolutely awful. I gave it a zero. I was being very, very kind in giving it a zero. It could have been a lot less than that. But the most interesting part of the whole story is at the end when Rod Serling does his cigarette commercial. And not only takes a drag on that cigarette, but sucks it in as far as he can to make sure that it totally destroys his heart. I mean, it is absolutely appalling to see that. I realize he had to do it for Chesterfield, the sponsor. But honest to God, it is absolutely appalling to see that. even if you consider the fact that much more is known about smoking now than ever was then, even back then people knew that smoking wasn't any good for you. It's ridiculous to think that you can take a smoke into your lungs and get anything out of it. But he sucks on that cigarette like it's the best thing in the world, and it's just startling to see that, and really, really sad to see a man with that much genius throw it all away in such a way. It is absolutely appalling. So
well,
anyway,
that was
I'm,
during the era where a lot of people smoked, like the gentleman we're talking about, Warren Stevens, today. He died of lung cancer. So.
But, Robert, people knew back then that it wasn't any good for you. I mean, come on. I mean, people smoked, but it was no secret that it certainly wasn't something you should be doing.
That's the way they looked at it. It was cool.
He doesn't just smoke. He really, you can hear him sucking the smoke in. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. And every TV show you watched back then, people smoked. And I Love Lucy, Dick Van Dyke Show, everybody.
Honey West.
Smoked.
Perry
Honey
Mason.
West. They all smoked, and nobody thought anything of it. That was the cool thing to do. And the sad part is Rod Serling died at 50. David Jansen was a smoker. He died at 48 years old. Of course, a lot of people say he worked himself to death, but, you know, it all adds up, you know.
Well, anyway, I gave it a zero. It's times like this that I wish I had created just one more number below it, because this one certainly deserves it, and I'm not about to change it. All right, that's it for me. I pushed this as far as I can, and they're not waiting for me any longer. The next time I'm on the show, I will be speaking from home, whatever and wherever in the hell that is. I'll be speaking from home.
And
bye, everybody.
Wait, Bobby.
Bye.
By the way, Felix said that the Drag My Rod was the best part of the show.
I couldn't agree more. All right, I got to go before they drag me out in the hallway.
All right. Bye-bye.
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 Okay, Robert, over to you, babe.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I didn't quite give it a zero rating for this one. Pretty much my feelings on it is I felt that they should have changed the ending a little bit to maybe add a little something more to it. I mean, here again, we get the cursed object situation. This time it's a pair of shoes, and we've gone through the whole thing. You know, he puts it on. I did like the progression of the soul of the dead person that's in the shoes taking over him, and it was very slow, because there's a scene where he's walking and his other bum buddies come up to him, and he still has some of his personality left, the bum does, but you see the integration of the other spirit, or, you know, whatever houses inside the shoes itself. I did like that one. And as Lynn says, very strange when he goes back to the apartment and, you know, she don't recognize him. She don't call the police. You don't kick him in the balls. Don't throw him out. Don't do nothing.
Shower.
Yeah.
He took a shower. He was in the shower. Why the
but
hell
did
she just leave? Well, I thought it seemed like he was shaving. He was doing all kinds of things. She looks in the room. And she sees, and yet she stays there. Why did she stay there?
Well, because she picked up the gun, so she felt safe when she had the gun in her hand.
That's true, but then he took it out of her hand very easily.
Well, see, this was part of the story that I had a problem with, which is, and we see him sit down, take the shoes off. Then he goes back to his original personality, okay? And then he gets ready and everything, puts the shoes back on. Now, my question is, he put the shoes back on before he took a shower. Now, did he take his shower with the shoes on? That was one of the questions I asked, too, because if he took the shoes off to take a shower, then he's the bum again.
Right.
It's kind of weird with that, but...
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense either, does it? Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's true.
He goes over to the mobster's bar, which I think is kind of stupid. I know it's the whole revenge type thing. We've mentioned that in past shows, you know, where, you know, I'm going to get you revenge and all this crap. But he's not very good at shooting. Probably how he got killed in the first place was because he sucked at shooting people. So this is going to be an on thing that each time he comes back and he gets shot by Bernie, and this violent cycle of undead keeps coming around again and again. I mean, you know, he pretty much is a zombie whoever wears the shoes is a zombie, but without the body of a zombie, might as well be.
Right.
Because,
yeah.
You know, it just keeps going over and over again. But actually, we're going to put a segment on here, first time, called Talking Twilight Zone Theater. And once in a while, if I have an interesting point I want to bring up, like maybe an ending I felt should have been better, or a scene that could have helped the story along, I'm going to go ahead and add this in here. But let me set it up for you before I play this. Basically, how I thought this should have ended is Bernie bringing the body back to the alley. You think he would eventually catch on, look at the shoes, and keep them with him.
Right.
Right.
I wonder why he didn't take the shoes.
I mean, the shoes weren't going to put that much of a defense up, because you got to actually be wearing them. You know, Bernie could have easily kept the shoes, burned them, threw them in. Well, I mean, there was a can there that the bums were using for heat, where they had a fire, and, you know, could have threw it in the fire there. And
yeah.
And actually, yeah, would have been a better ending. And evidently, Bernie's not too bright, so.
Right, know. Exactly. Why didn't he take the shoes? Yeah.
Anyway, let's go ahead and run what I felt the ending should have been. Welcome to Talking Twilight Zone Theater. Okay, let's dump the body here. Wait a minute. Something's familiar. He said he'd come back to get me. His shoes look awful familiar. Well, there's a fire over here. Let's throw these shoes in the fire. Okay, boys, let's go.
Very careless of you. As for these, we'll discuss them at some future date.
There's an old saying that goes, if the shoe fits, wear it. But be careful. If you happen to find a pair of size 9 black and gray loafers made to order in the old country, be very careful. You might walk right into the Twilight Zone.
And that was Talking Twilight Zone Theater.
Yay! Yay! That was good. That's great.
But, you know, it's been fun to find the shoes right next to the barrel where he threw it in the fire there. And that would have added a little bit, I think, more to this. But
I agree. I totally agree.
One of the things that I was going to bring about Warren Stevens, as we said earlier, while Lynn was giving her summation of the story, that he just passed away this March. Besides Twilight Zone, he's been in other series as well. He's made an appearance in a series called Science Fiction Theater, which came out in 1955. And that one, he plays an inventor who, surprisingly, you know, those little Roomba machines that
mm-hmm.
you know, people got in their house to clean and stuff like that.
Well,
oh, yeah, evidently,
yeah.
He came up with a broom that went on the floor and, you know, a machine that went on the floor and swept the floor up. And
oh.
It was in this story here. So let me go ahead and I'll play it for you. Kind of science fiction theater is set up almost like Twilight Zone. So it came out in 1955, where you got a narrator that comes on and introduces the story, and then they go right into the story. So
mm-hmm.
I'm going to play that.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? I'm your host, Truman Bradley. It's a difficult gadget, an automatic man, a very useful experimental machine belonging to the Garrett Corporation and designed by a brilliant young engineer, Harvey Chapman, Jr. of Glendale. Inside this machine, there are hundreds of small motors, component parts of many airplane control devices, each with a capacity to replace certain human functions. What can this machine do? Handle dangerous chemicals or radioactive isotopes too hot for the ordinary man. Or touch live wires without ever getting hurt. Someday soon, we'll have an automatic man around the house to mow the lawn, dry the dishes, drive the car, and babysit when we go out. That's for tomorrow or the day after. But tomorrow may come soon.
Yes?
I didn't mean to be a peeping Tom, but the noise of that, that machine.
The sonic broom? What about it?
Well, as I say, the noise is... Would you call it a sonic broom?
Nothing to get excited about. Any housewife can use one.
Well, I know, but I've never seen anything like it in my life. It's weird. It's fantastic.
Works by remote control. Would you like to see it?
Yes, I would.
It's a new principle of mine. I invented it.
Like I said, Rumba already thought of back in 1955. Now, either the writer of this series did The Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original movie with Kevin McCartney. So somehow he was involved in this series. So
that's pretty cool.
Uh-huh. And talking about robots at the beginning there, usually I think they try to fit in something that's factual before they go into the episode itself. So yeah, that was kind of interesting. Also, another episode or a show that he appeared in was in the original Star Trek, where he played Rojan in By Any Other Name. It was season 2, episode 22. And here is the trailer for that one.
Captain's log, stardate 4658.9. With the Enterprise under control of the Kelvins, we are approaching the energy barrier at the edge of our galaxy.
Any efforts to resist us or to escape will be severely punished.
Jim, I saw them reduce 4 of my doctors and nurses into those little...
They've reduced the whole crew!
What is it?
Well, it's green.
You are trying to seduce me.
Me? I'm stimulating him.
When we engage the barrier, the ship will explode.
So you remember that episode, Dave?
Yeah, that was where he's making sugar lumps, but they're a bit big for a tequila glass.
I know. Big white boxes. And the choice between, you know, the guy and the gal that got turned into those boxes and one being killed, remember that? And you seen the expression on Kirk's face.
Done.
Yeah.
Crushed in his hand.
Well, the what question?
They picked the two up and he threw one back on the ground, the other one he crushed.
Yeah.
I think it was the girly crush.
Yep. And you just seen that look on his face, like, you know, was it just so much the woman or the crew member? Because we all know how Kirk was with the women. So
and
anyway,
I want to welcome guest number 6, and Robert, guest number 6 has a question for you.
I think Star Trek episode is okay, not great, but I have one big problem with it. What happened to the dramatic improvements of, or to warp drive at the end of the episode?
Done stuff to the ship, haven't they?
Yeah, because they just kind of reversed it back to where it originally was, but the barrier situation was a thing that is always brought up in a lot of the stories. They remember, I think, wasn't it in the Star Trek movies too, where we had to go through the barrier, you know, Rafikon, where, you know, we go into the barrier there and have Khan follow us. So, yeah, that's kind of an easy plot device that they could write in there. But yeah, I agree with you, guest 6. I don't know why they would want to, you know, after those improvements. Maybe they felt that it might burn the dilithium crystals out or burn the engine up if they still stayed. Because remember, during that time, the engines were specified for a certain way of going, just like in Enterprise and going, you know, back with, I think they can only go to warp 4 or 5, was it, in Enterprise? The Scott Bakula series there?
I'm not too sure. In Next Generation, I think it was 7. So it probably was only about 4 or 4.5.
5, something like that. It couldn't go very fast. You know, shoot, the Borg did better than we did on engineering technology. <so. laughs> And also...
5,
the,
thank you. Thank you, guest 6.
5. One of the things also that he is well known for as well, Warren Stevens, was he played the Doctor on a very popular movie called Forbidden Planet with Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And Anne Francis, who is a Twilight Zone alumni as well.
Two episodes, yeah. Oh, no, yep. Wait, yeah, 2 episodes, yes.
Yeah, 2 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
The After Hours and Jezebel.
Jezebel, right. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Here's for that one.
Imagine yourself as one of the crew of this faster-than-light spaceship of the future, sharing their curiosity to know the unknown, their tension, their readiness for inconceivable adventures.
Sir, we're being radar scanned.
United Planets cruiser C-57D, J.J. Adams commanding. Who are you?
Morbius of the Bellerophon.
Well, Dr. Morbius, my orders are to survey the situation on Altair 4.
Commander, if you set down on this planet, I warn you that I cannot be answerable for the safety of your ship or your crew.
When you reach the Forbidden Planet, you will meet Dr. Morbius, played by Walter Pidgeon. The doctor is sole owner of this fabulous world. Anne Francis is his alluring daughter, Alta, who has never seen a young man till she meets Commander Adams, played by talented Leslie Nielsen.
Not in.
Didn't bring my bathing suit.
What's a bathing suit?
Oh, murder.
You will meet a charming character in The Robot, able to produce, on order, 10 tons of lead or a slinky evening gown. Always at your service.
It must be the loveliest, softest thing you've ever made for me. And fit in all the right places. With lots and lots of star sapphires.
Star sapphires take a week to crystallize properly. Would diamonds or emeralds do?
You explore all the wonders of a vanished civilization. You travel deep down into the heart of the Forbidden Planet to discover the incredible marvels of this lost genius race. These magnificent scenes in striking Eastman color stagger the imagination.
20 miles. Look down, gentlemen. Are you afraid? 7,800 levels.
Yet the wonders of the planet Altair 4 conceal a strange and evil force, unknown, irresistible.
And that was the trailer for Forbidden Planet. Yeah, kind of liked that movie. And I remember it well because I watched it. Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
I've got it on Blu-ray, and it's one of the best pictures, you know, on my PlayStation 3 and high definition TV. The picture looks stunning.
Yeah, I'll have to get that on Blu-ray. I got a Blu-ray player here. I just got a great deal on. I got a Blu-ray player for $61 at Christmas time, which you can play regular DVDs on. Yeah. So,
that's giving it away.
That's really an awesome price. Absolutely.
And also, since we're talking possessions, you know, some shows to mention, Ghostbusters 2, that one involved a pitcher that was possessed by an evil tyrant back in the old country that possessed a museum painter or whatever in that movie, and that led to a lot of problems with that. We got the Amityville Horror where James Brolin is possessed by the house, and very similar to the Shining.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little piece of that. So, like I said, very similar later on to what we get with the Shining.
There isn't it.
Why?
I just want to go back to my room.
Why?
Well, I'm very confused. I just need a chance to think things over.
You've had your whole life to think things over. What good's a few minutes more going to do you now?
Stay with me. Please. Don't hurt me.
I'm not going to hurt you.
Stay away from me.
Wendy.
Stay away.
Darling, light of my life. I'm not going to hurt you. You didn't let me finish my sentence. I said, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your brains. I'm gonna bash him right in.
And we
he was an angel, wasn't he?
Oh yeah, and Edith, it sounds like his voice was changing too, where he, you know, Nicholson's talking there, yeah. And it's like his Wendy, like that.
It's awesome in that.
He was definitely. I like Nicholson, and one who Over the Cuckoo's Nest is another good one. That
one of my all-time favorite movies. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 2 out of 5 is what I gave this one. So,
okay. Okay, Dave.
Okay, yeah. Just when you mentioned the Forbidden Planet, also reminded me of a Doctor Who episode. This is for Robert, really, I suppose, in the room. Planet of Evil, the 4th Doctor story, where they had that sort of energy creature from the pit. I'm sure that was taken straight out of Forbidden Planet.
Or 42, with David Tennant.
Well, maybe, yeah. Yeah. Possibly. Anyway, back to the episode. Well, it could have been so much better. I mean, I think the concept idea was good. The very first thing, because I watched it just yesterday, and it's a while since I've seen it. So my first thought on rewatching it was when, you know, you see the original scene and the car comes into the back alley and dumps the body. I thought, you didn't see the face of the corpse. You didn't see the face of the corpse. So now we pan up to the chap on the fire escape trying to sleep, who gets disturbed. Obviously, who ends up being the main character. I'm thinking, all right, you're going to see him wear the shoes, but the kicker's going to be not a kick from the shoes, but it's going to be actually is the spitting image of the bloke who got killed. So I was half expecting them to recognise his face again as well. But I suppose that would have been sort of playing it on two levels and made it a little bit confusing.
Well, it also would have been too much like The Four of Us Are Dying, where the guy changes his face for everybody that he's going to be.
Well, again,
it
wouldn't have worked, obviously, for the way they ended. And and jumping towards then, I mean, I thought it was quite surprising. I think you, Robert, said this guy wasn't much of a shooter, but in actual fact, the reason he'd gone into that office so confident, first of all, he knew they'd frisk him, so he carried two guns. So, you know, it's the old thing. If you're going to do something like that, you carry two. So if they're expecting, they find one, they don't bother looking for another. So, you know, he's being frisked, so he's still armed. The others go out. He also knew that the last time he'd been there, he'd been shot from behind. So in actual fact, as soon as he knew, I don't know, I think they should have really just had one quick shot of the other gangster, like, pressing a button under his... you know, under the top of his table or something. They should have given us a quick close-up of him pressing a button or something, i.e. to call help. But he whipped round and he shoots that guy, which was brilliant. I thought, oh, yeah. And then, surprise, there's another shot, and you find out there's another secret compartment on the other side of the room facing him. Of course, he didn't know about that one, because the first time round, he was caught out and killed by the person in the back. So the fellow at the front never had to fire. So I thought that was quite good. The fact that, you know, he's bragging, you know, you caught me once, but you won't catch me twice. They did catch him twice because he never suspected that they would have another one covering him from the front. So I thought that gave it a little bit more credit than perhaps some people have said. But I do, I mean... they're very, very thin, the plots on some of this season. I mean, literally, I think you get an A4 sheet of paper, fold it in half, fold it in quarters, fold it again, and then you could write the plot on what was left. You know, they literally are written on the back of a postage stamp, some of these plots. But on the other hand, you know, I thought the main character, again, is Warren Stevens. Acting was pretty good, the way he switched off. Robert caught a good one there with the fact that he must have also taken the shoes off to go and have the shower. Maybe he did have an episode where he got confused but thought, hang on, never mind, this is a hot shower. I'll worry about it when I get out of the hot shower. And then, of course, as soon as he gets out of the shower and puts the clothes on, he switches back into character again. So I suppose you could argue it could have been on off, and they could have, you know, decided not to just show that bit for, you know, for the plot reasons. So, oh, a mirror. That was another thing. As soon as he went into the bathroom, there he is. How many times does the main character in Twilight Zone look into a mirror? Now, is this sort of, yeah, is it an analogy for the fact that the Twilight Zone is like another universe on the other side of the mirror? But I'm
well, we had a stop at Willoughby where James Daly character looks in the mirror, yeah?
And then he busts it, and then he breaks it. And then that terrible one, Shelley Berman, where he's talking to himself in the mirror, a nervous man in a $5 room.
Right.
$4 room, right? Yeah.
It went up a dollar.
Yeah, and then there was the one with the boxer. And
Boxer, right.
And then we had the Castro one. There's been loads
mirror.
Of them where...
Yeah, mirror, yeah.
Yeah, so what else? I haven't really made it in many more notes, but other than the fact that it's a near miss. It's not really a near miss. It's a good concept, but it's paper thin as a plot, and it barely gets them through the 20 minutes. And to just deal with what Bobby said, you know, with him smoking a cigarette at the end, I've got a feeling that he probably got paid more for that 30-second thing at the end, that he probably got paid, you know, for being the director of the episode.
Yeah.
So in other words, he gets paid. He might have only got $500 for running the show. He might have got $1,000 for smoking a cigarette. You know.
I'm a sponsor.
Well, remember when Bobby brought up about the cigarette thing? Well, remember game shows, well known for part of the. Win, if you win, you get to take home a carton of cigarettes with you. So
I didn't notice it. It didn't seem to have a filter on it either, did it? There were filters.
Did, some didn't. I think back then filterless cigarettes were more popular. But they did have filtered cigarettes back then, but a lot of people smoked filterless, which was even more deadly.
And I've only got one other thing to mention, and a bit of a sexist thing of me to say, I suppose. But the other, when he goes to the club and there's his partner or his ex-partner there sitting and he's staring at, and he's got this blonde bimbo girlfriend with him.
Yeah.
I'm looking at her and I'm thinking, I mean, I know the actual gangster was in his late 40s, early 50s. But she looked older than him. I thought, blimey, you would have thought if he had the girl around for, you know, a window dressing and, you know, basically a trophy girl, usually there'd be, you know, girl under 30. That woman looked older than him, unless it was my imagination.
Yeah, she was up there. She was up there in years,
yeah. But they say black and white adds 5 years to your looks. I guess that's true.
Oh, well, you would know. The fella who wears high heels, you'd know.
Oh, God. So what do you give this episode, Dave?
I think I'll give it two out of five. I'd like to give it more, but I honestly don't feel as though... you got a feeling that they're not... They're phoning the stories in a little bit at this point, aren't they?
Yeah.
So would this rate a bronze for you, Dave?
And it just, the whole thing just fell apart for me with the woman. I mean, she's sitting there in that apartment. All she had to do was run out. I mean, if a strange man walked into my apartment and then went in the bathroom, took a shower, was shaving and doing all kinds of things, the door's right there. Just go. Or
I don't know, Dave, unless she was Jackie Tyler.
Well, there was a bit of confusion. Yeah, right. But there's a bit of confusion there as well, because it was clear that it was the girl's apartment, not his apartment. I'm sure that was mentioned a couple of times, or at least once. And yet in the bedroom was all his clothes. So, again, I think it was probably too gentle to say it, but I don't think she was his girlfriend. Don't think she was his wife. She was probably his...
Mistress?
Yeah, his mistress. His mistress. I mean, basically, you assume that he was paying for the apartment.
But then also, you notice that she picks up the phone and she calls the club. Now, if she could pick up the phone to call the club, why didn't she pick up the phone and call the police unless she knew that...
No, because
he was a mobster. Yeah.
He wouldn't want the police involved.
Right, that's true, because he was a mobster. Yeah, so it was just, I don't know, it was just a weird kind of episode. But, yeah, too, yeah, you guys are being generous there. I mean, I didn't think the acting was terrible, but I just thought that the whole plot was ridiculous, really. But
now, I usually check the site, but I didn't get a chance to check and see what the ratings are for this one over there.
That's the thing I usually like to say. The original air date was the 19th of January, 1962. And it was season 3, episode 83.
83, right, exactly.
Dave, since we got you on here, I wanted to ask you, since we're going a little off topic here, as most people know, the Olympics this year is going on. At the time of recording, we got about another week to go, and it's over in London. So, the man from Manchester, Dave AC, how you been enjoying the Olympics so far on the TV, I guess?
Well, you might be happy to believe that the United States are in the lead with 26 gold medals, followed by China with 25 gold medals. Great Britain and Northern Ireland punching above the weight in third place with 14 gold medals. The fabulous Jessica Ennis won the heptathlon today. That was brilliant. We got a gold in the 10,000 metre men's. We've got some medals in the jumping. We've got some great medals in the swimming. Was watching a fabulous swimmer from China, young lad who's only about 17 or something,
wow,
do tremendously. It's been really fabulous. And here we've had 24 channels dedicated to all the different sports. And today was like Super Saturday because there was an awful lot going on today. There was handball, water polo, table tennis, weightlifting, tennis. We've got Andy Murray into the mixed doubles final. He's into the men's final. It's been absolutely fabulous.
I've hardly watched any of it, but as you can imagine, I haven't really had the time, but I watched a little bit here and there. But, yeah, I watched some of the swimming, and I watched some of the, what was it yesterday? I watched the water polo. You know, I watched a few things, but, you know, I haven't gotten to see much of it.
I've been watching Phelps and his 21.
Oh, Phelps, yeah.
Total from all the Olympics that he's done, yeah. He kind of got a slow start, but he finally started getting to the groove there. So
Felix says he misses the Cold War days. And guest six says he wishes that they used the old medal scoring system. Yeah. Yeah, well... But anyway, to get back on topic, 2 weeks from today, the 18th of August, we are going to be talking about a favorite of mine, The Hunt. And that episode will be up for discussion on Saturday, August 18th. Am I correct, Robert? Do I have the date right?
Mm-hmm. Make sure on
18th, yeah. Yep, it's
yep,
the 4th
18th, yep. 18th, and that is The Hunt, and I actually enjoy that episode, so that should be a lot of fun to talk about.
Story about a man named Ged, a poor mountaineer,
barely kept his family fed.
Then one day he was shooting
that fruit, and up to the,
and out to the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is. Black gold.
Texas tea. Well, that's what we're going to be doing in 2 weeks. Not that, of course. We won't chase everyone out. But
Jed!
Well, doggies. And speaking of doggies, there is a lovely dog in this episode. So we will be doing that 2 weeks from now. So with that, I am going to say have a wonderful weekend to everyone. And I'm going to be doing what I've been doing for the past few Saturdays, and I'm going to be making dinner for Bobby and heading over to the hospital with it. Saturday night's the only night he gets my cooking, so I'm bringing him a Cornish hen tonight. Yeah.
What on earth is that?
Corey Tan. Well, I hope it's cooked.
Oh, I guess I will. All right, if I have to cook it.
You're going to bring him alive, Corny Shin.
He's going to let him kill
Here's
himself.
Here's the knife.
Let him kill himself.
Okay, go at it.
I'm tired.
Here, kill your own food. Here you go.
Damn Here's right. Well, doggies.
Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper?
Felix says I can eat two hens. Well, I actually do have two hens here. I don't know if I'm going to bring him one or two. He's losing weight, and that's good, so I'm going to let him keep losing weight. I think I'm just going to bring him one hen. I'll have to look at the size of them. They are kind of small.
See, Dave? Women teasing us.
There you go. Two birdies. All right, guys. Well, you have a wonderful weekend, and I am going to head out of here. And
okay.
I'll see you
Oh, and happy anniversary to my mom and dad. They're celebrating their 51st wedding anniversary next week. We're going to have a little party for them, and, yeah, 51
years. Tell them that I wish them the best. 51 years. Good Lord. That's great. That's just great. And just tell them we said happy anniversary, and Felix, thanks for coming in. And guest six, thanks for coming in, and I hope we see. Ed didn't show up today. I guess he was on one of his DJing gigs. Because he's a mobile disc jockey, so hopefully we'll see him in a couple of weeks. But have a wonderful weekend,
and
everyone.
Thanks, guest six, for coming on too. Appreciate you taking the time to check out the show.
And Felix, and we'll see you all in 2 weeks. Bye, folks.
Bye.
Bye.